May it please the court.
Counsel.
Nominee. Your Honors, my name is Phil Scanlon, and I represent the appellant, Travis Broker. Now, this case is on appeal after Mr. Broker was found guilty of both conspiracy to distribute fentanyl and also distribution of fentanyl resulting in death. This appeal concerns only the latter charge, distribution of fentanyl resulting in death. I'm arguing 2 points. First, that Mr. Broker's conviction and sentence should be overturned and vacated as the jury verdict of guilty was found despite insufficient evidence that the fentanyl ingested by the decedent was the same fentanyl that he obtained from Mr. Broker. The second argument is that even if the court finds that the evidence is sufficient, that justice necessitates Mr. Broker receiving a new trial in light of the evidentiary weight combined with improper limitations on Mr. Broker's ability to further his defense. And his defense was simply that the decedent had alternative sources of a lot of different drugs, chief among them fentanyl, and that he died from fentanyl gained from an alternative source, or at the very least, evidence of alternative sources raised the issue of reasonable doubt. With respect to the first argument, the sufficiency of evidence argument, here's what the trial revealed. Number one, that the decedent had a longstanding substance abuse issue. Number two, that on the day in question, Mr. Broker provided 6 fentanyl capsules to the decedent. The decedent goes home and either he ingests 3 capsules worth or a portion of 3 capsules worth, overdoses, goes to the hospital. Now, while the decedent's at the hospital, his roommate seizes the remaining 3 capsules as well as the decedent's cell phone. The decedent comes home. He's driven home by an unknown person. He's with a roommate until about 2 a.m. And then there's a 4-hour window, and then the decedent is found deceased in his bedroom around 6 a.m. Toxicology results showed that there was a variety of illegal substances within the decedent's system, among them fentanyl. And throughout the trial, Mr. Burke was not allowed to inquire about or attempt to admit evidence concerning text messages regarding the decedent's attempts to find other means of obtaining illegal drugs, specifically fentanyl and opiates.
But what weren't those text messages, weren't the responses, "I don't have any drugs," from the other dealers?
Yes, Judge Strauss, specifically regarding Defendant Exhibit B. And the record is somewhat convoluted, not convoluted, but I thought trial counsel did a great job. I wish there was an offer of proof, but there were a large amount of text messages, and trial counsel conceded that I will narrow these messages to a particular day.
Well, is there anything in the record on appeal? Is there a message in the record on appeal other than "I don't have anything to sell you"?
Not a physical exhibit. Trial counsel did attempt to inquire about or begin to inquire about other text messages that
wait,
were obtained.
Are we in chambers? Or are we in front?
This was during the cross-examination of Mr. Dotson, who did the cell phone data dump, as well as Detective Persich. And the question asked was, did you find evidence of the other illegal drugs found in the decedent's system when cross-examining Detective Persich? And with Mr. Dotson, there was a question about, did you find any text messages regarding the Percocets or opiates?
Now, I think it was Ativan or something. I think the Ativan issue is actually a pretty interesting issue, that there were other drugs that were not connected to the dealer, to Broker, who wasn't selling Ativan, and there's no evidence that he had it. But I'm just not sure about the text messages, because what relevance do they have if it just shows that the decedent here was trying to get drugs and that nobody else said they had any. And I don't understand what the relevance of those text messages would have been at trial. So leaving aside the Ativan.
Understood, Your Honor. I believe the relevance would be it goes to show that in combination with the fact that there was evidence that the decedent had a substance abuse issue, I think it's reasonable to infer that reaching out to somebody under the limitations of what could be admitted or inquired about, it's not like he reached out to this person and Mr. Berker and that's it.
But it has to be relevant in time.
Sure, I would agree with you.
We know there are three unconsumed capsules that Mr. Broker sold. What else? What do these text messages show about the possibility that, I guess, after he got home from the hospital and was done chatting with Felton, or he went off and got him somewhere else?
Understood, Judge Logan. That would imply that he didn't have additional fentanyl that was obtained prior to that date, or during the time from when he left the hospital to getting home.
We wanted to put in some things that would permit the jury to speculate.
I wouldn't go so far.
This is not an issue on appeal, frankly.
Understood, Judge. And the reason why the first point is important is that, although, in my opinion, the stronger point is the second one, the law allows for this court to reweigh the evidence in determining whether a new trial should be granted. In that same vein,
I thought your argument was was a Burrage argument. I think it's Burrage, but anyway, this is not that argument. It has nothing to do with that. The whole brief was about Burrage, and we're talking about just straight sufficiency of the evidence appeal.
Burrage was touched on, Your Honor, but the main two points were sufficiency of the evidence, and in light of even if the evidence is sufficient, in light of the weight of the evidence. That combined with the inability to inquire about or admit evidence of alternative sources was such that it prejudiced Mr. Broker's right to a fair trial. The government's theory in this case is simple, specifically related to the charge in question, that Mr. Broker provided fentanyl to the defendant resulting in death. The defense was simple, that there were alternative sources.
The jury heard that, and it made its fine. It made it came to its verdict, and it didn't even list as an issue on appeal that the exclusion of these text messages was reversible error.
I'm sorry, Judge. Can you repeat that?
Well, you could have made as a separate issue on appeal that the exclusion of these text messages was reversible error.
And Judge, I obviously didn't make it clear enough, but I believe that was contained under Roman numeral 2. Which was the second argument.
Well, but the weight of the evidence, that doesn't get to exclusion of evidence. That doesn't, you don't get a new trial under the weight of the evidence argument by saying the judge had made an evidentiary error.
Correct.
That's a separate issue.
Correct, but that in conjunction with the evidentiary rulings.
No, the evidentiary ruling doesn't come into play. It's there. The evidence is what the evidence is. If there was an evidentiary error, that's a separate issue for appeal.
Correct, Judge. Amaya is the case that I'm basing this off of. It was a 2013 Eighth Circuit case, in stating that in reviewing the denial of a motion for new trial, that's where evidentiary weight, as well as and put into that argument as a sub argument to the overarching argument, was that weight combined with the inability to both inquire and admit evidence.
No, you didn't preserve that. It's not a sub argument. It's an unpreserved issue.
I believe it was objected to and preserved.
All right, it's not preserved on appeal because it isn't in your statement of issues on appeal.
Judge, unless I submitted a brief that was in error, I believe it was in there, but clearly I didn't make it.
Well, no, it's in there, but it's not a separate issue. It's being argued like a separate issue, and then we can't even figure out what the record on appeal has with respect to that issue. I know you're looking for a new playing field, but you don't get that one.
Understood, Judge.
I thought you were going to argue under Barrage that there was no but-for showing, and then I was going to get into the definition in Cathy of what that requires. And I was going to ask you, isn't that exactly what Norfleet testified to? And you've got a big section of the brief that says Norfleet was a medical examiner who was in cahoots with the prosecutor and so forth.
And Judge, I believe that is part of the sufficiency of the evidence argument. Judge, I'm way over time. Can I?
Well, I just... A straight sufficiency of the evidence argument as we look at could a reasonable jury on the evidence
sure.
for it.
Okay. Sure.
And that's all you presented. And then the weight is the same. That's straightforward.
Well, I would respectfully disagree, but understood.
Well, I know, but I mean if you've got a case that says it's any all right. I understand
you.
Your position. Thanks.
Thank you, Judge. And I know I've used the time, but
no,
whatever time I can use on rebuttal.
We used your time, but I used your time.
Hey, you're the judge.
Mr. Wadalawala. No.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes.
Excuse me if I messed that up.
You didn't, and it wouldn't have been the first time. So. May it please the court. Mr. Scanlon, good morning, Your Honors. My name is Noman Wadalawala, and it is my privilege to be here with you this morning on behalf of the government. I also served as trial counsel on this matter, along with my colleague, Assistant United States Attorney Serena Whistler. Your Honors, before I proceed with my argument and address some of the concerns that were brought up when Mr. Scanlon was up here, I did want to point out a crucial error in Mr. Scanlon's brief, specifically on page 27 and 28. On these two pages, it mentions that, and I'm paraphrasing, that there were 20 pills found in the victim's room, 20 heroin and fentanyl pills found in the victim's room when detectives searched his bedroom after his fatal overdose. However, if we look at the trial transcript, specifically, volume 3, page 125 and 126, we see that the victim's roommate, when he confiscated the victim's phone, provided it to law enforcement officers, and law enforcement officers then used that phone to contact Mr. Broker, set up an undercover buy. And Mr. Broker then sent his girlfriend on his behalf, and when she arrived, she actually provided the law enforcement officers with the 20 fentanyl pills, which were identical to the 3 fentanyl pills that the roommate also provided to law enforcement officers from the victim's bedroom. So these 20 pills actually were not in the victim's bedroom, and in fact, there were actually no heroin and fentanyl pills in the victim's bedroom other than the 3 that the roommate provided the law enforcement officers. Now, the government's position here is that the district court did not err when it overruled the defendant's motion for judgment of acquittal because the government did provide significant evidence that there was a causal link between Mr. Broeker, who met with the victim, sold the victim fentanyl, and then it was that fentanyl that actually led to the victim's death. Mr. Broeker actually conceded at trial.
That wasn't argued this morning.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it's been briefed.
Yes, Your Honor. And so to address the points that actually were argued just now, I will actually talk about, and I believe Judge Strauss, you brought this up, with regards to the other drugs that were in the victim's bloodstream. Dr. Norfleet actually addressed that, the medical examiner, when he testified. He specifically said that the lorazepam, gabapentin, and bupropion that was in the victim's bloodstream was diagnostically insignificant for him to label this as a mixed drug intoxication. He concluded that the level of fentanyl in the victim's bloodstream was so high that it was incompatible and inconsistent with life. And so his conclusion was that the cause of death here was, in fact, fentanyl intoxication.
Well, let me ask you this. So the reason why I was concerned about that is not only do you have those drugs in his system, but my recollection is they actually found pills in the room showing that he was able to obtain drugs from another dealer. And I don't think wasn't it cut off? That line of questioning was cut off about asking about those other pills in the bedroom. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, Your Honor, you're correct. So there was some lorazepam pills that were found in the bedroom. Yeah. But again, even with those being found, it's not relevant here because at some whatever point in time he obtained these lorazepam pills, what we saw when the medical examiner and the toxicologist looked at the narcotics that were in his bloodstream, it was not significant enough here to actually...
No, I understand that, but drug dealers are not always one drug ponies, so to speak, which is to say that if you sell one kind of drug, you might sell other kinds of drugs too. So this goes to show that he bought from multiple dealers, and it's quite possible that the dealer he bought those pills from may have given him more fentanyl. I mean, a lot of this is speculation, but it seems to me like going down that line could have been relevant to show that he had multiple dealers providing drugs.
Your Honor, he could have had multiple dealers providing drugs, but what we do know is that the government presented evidence that Mr. Broeker was the one who sold him the fentanyl, and it was the fentanyl that actually led to his death.
Right.
So there wasn't any other evidence provided that there was any other type of drugs.
Could whoever sold him the lorazepam, which was not Mr. Broeker, also have sold him fentanyl? And I think that's the point I'm trying to make as to what I think they were trying to prove.
It could have been a possibility. However, what we see here is that there was an admission and a concession by Mr. Broeker that he, in fact, did sell him the fentanyl, and those were the only fentanyl pills that were found. And I think strong evidence of that is the fact that the three fentanyl pills that the victim gave to law enforcement officers were identical to the fentanyl pills from the control buy that Ms. Barton brought at the and turned over to law enforcement officers.
So the third party essentially would have had to sell the exact same pills, you know, if there were a third party dealer to be able to connect them to the pills that were actually found, which does strengthen your argument.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree. There was also this issue about Exhibit B. So Exhibit B is five text messages. There are no other text messages that are being challenged here. It's just those five text messages that they're asking that should have been admitted into evidence. And I agree with the court here that if we look at the context, two of the text messages, it was the victim who had sent a message out saying, "Do you have anything?" And simultaneously, he had actually sent that message to Mr. Broeker as well. And the response from the unknown third party was, "No, I don't." And so therefore, we correctly believe that the district court denied admitting this in evidence because it adds no relevancy here.
Do you think it's an issue on appeal?
No, Your Honor. I mean, it was brought up in the brief.
I know, but doesn't it have to be in the, you know, you read the Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure. It has to be in your statement of issues, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree.
Erroneous abuse of discretion in excluding evidence.
Correct, Your Honor, I would agree.
Is a distinct legal issue. Is it preserved for us?
Your Honor, I would say it's not. It hasn't been preserved. Your Honor, I see that the government feels that we have addressed the issues. I do want to just quickly highlight Dr. Riley and Dr. Norfleet's testimony. I do believe that strengthens our argument because we had two experts testify. Dr. Riley did specifically say that fentanyl alone could cause a person to stop breathing and that fentanyl alone could kill someone, whereas lorazepam, gabapentin, and bupropion cannot. And it was Dr. Norfleet who took her report, applied it to this specific set of circumstances, and there was no evidence presented to the jury to the contrary. Unless there are any other further questions, I would simply ask this court to affirm Mr. Broker's conviction. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Is there rebuttal time?
His time had expired, Your Honor.
All right. I think we understand the issues, and the case has been thoroughly briefed, and argument's been helpful. We'll take it under advisement.